Brother, I'm going. Run a wild Hulk Hogan. If I like get some moment, I'll make sure it's an explosion. Cause lately I've been seeing stars, trying to kick out on this joke course. But it's no hope.
What is up, ladies and gentlemen? This is We Too Deep. We're back with another episode of the Slap and Meat Wrestling Podcast. And I know what you're thinking. Where were we on Tuesday? It's just been a crazy week. We had some big storms on Tuesday and had to miss recording because of that. Speaking of storms, I want to go ahead and start this out. And if you're in the audience and you're in the path of this hurricane Helene, hope you're safe. Hope all is well, and sending thoughts and prayers to all of those areas affected. In that same realm, the storm is literally on top of me right now as I'm recording. Not hurricane level, but if at all the lights go out, it's because we lost power. We're gonna push through because we got a full charge on the laptop. but if the lights go out, it's gonna be one dark episode. Yeah, all affected. I know. I just checked the power outage map to see if there are any in the location I'm in. None where I'm at, but a little bit south of me, closer to Charlotte, in the state of North Carolina, where I'm at, we got about 100,000-200,000 people without power. And I know in Florida, it's a lot worse. So thoughts and prayers out to you all. If you're in that path, but let's get into wrestling. So the reason I really am recording this at the moment is, one, I don't want y'all to miss a full week of wrestling content. I know there are listeners here who enjoy listening to this show, but also to sort of take some people's minds off of whatever may be going on, right? I think that's the reason I've continued to do this, is wrestling is something that brings people together, and that's what I want to do here, right? So let's dive on in. It's going to be real easy for this show. I'm going to take what I planned for Tuesday, and I'm just going to go with it. Wavy D, when you hear this, if you want to contribute to the conversation, I'm more than certain you're okay posting your stuff in the Discord to create that conversation. So you're more than willing to do that. Let's jump in with reviewing Raw. This was going to be the main thing we talked about. excuse me. We'll start with just some of the main points from Raw. The first part is that I want to talk about is this was. I don't know, man. It just felt super mid to me, and that's not a problem normally. But I just feel Triple H has done here recently is, and what I've noticed in pattern is that he books for big events. So he books for Mania, he books for SummerSlam, right? And in the in between, he sort of gives you the next pay-per-view match, right? And the first week. So, like, when Bad Blood's next Saturday, when he gave us the Bad Blood matches about a week or two after SummerSlam, we still had a whole month of build we needed to get through. And he's not the best at that. I've been saying that. Y'all know how I feel about Triple H's booking. That's a pattern. He did that with Black and Gold NXT, if you guys watched it, where the week to week was just kind of mid, and he blows the load quickly and then sort of has to put it in cruise control to sort of get to the destination. And one of the big issues with booking 6 months in advance is you have your destination, and if you're not good at keeping content interesting enough for a 6 month period of time, it starts to get monotonous. And that's what Raw feels like to me, right? So we get the announcement that Dom is going to be in the shark cage at Bad Blood. It's interesting. Not the way I would have gone with it. I don't know. I don't know what that adds to the story. Dom's literally thinner than the holes between a shark cage. I don't see how that's supposed to restrain him or what that's supposed to do. This match felt like this should have been a Hell in a Cell match. And instead, we're going to get a shark cage match. And it just doesn't fit the story to me. Next, we had Sammy versus Kaiser, which was a really good match. My fear with this, bringing Sammy back into Gunther, is I feel like it's rushed. I feel like the with your current world champions on both brands, you really don't have a proper opponent for each of them, right? So Cody is that super babyface, and you really don't have a proper opponent for him on SmackDown. But right, so on Raw, you don't have a proper opponent for Gunther. And that's because there's two reasons for it. The first reason is Gunther doesn't have a defined character. So he's not a full-blown heel in most people's mind. And he's not like a good guy. He's not the babyface either. So he's sort of this tweener. And unless you give us the motivation of each story. So like Gunther should be that guy who trash talks his opponents. I'm an elitist. I'm better than you. This, that, and the third. So when you get somebody like a Bron Breakker who you want to put against him, well, Bron Breakker is going to be a babyface. That's going to be Gunther's opponent. That's what they've been trying to build towards for Gunther, but I don't think they've done a good job on either ends of conveying that Gunther is a strong heel that we need saving from, right? Kaiser's feels a little bit more important in that group, which is, as someone who is a Gunther fan, when Gunther steps in the ring, I still think he's top three in the world. But the rest of the entertainment side of this, Gunther lacks a lot of that ability. And I've tried to defend it in the past as, well, that's just his gimmick. He's the anti-gimmick. And over time, I've realized, well, the anti-gimmick sort of meet me in the ring every week works if you're going to do an open challenge for your title. I'm just better than you, come meet me in the ring works if you're going to wrestle every single week. But when Gunther's not doing that, now you just feel like, well, you need something to keep me interested in you. Right? It worked with its IC gimmick. It worked with the NXT UK title because he was fighting every single time they were airing a show. With the world title, you don't want your world champion fighting every single week. It just diminishes the title. I'm sorry, it does. And so you got to give me something with Gunther where it's more than just I like your wrestling. We move into this match of Dragon Lee versus Carlito, and I'm tired of this. I'm not even going to spend time talking about it outside of this is, to me, you know, LWO versus Judgment Day is the same level of I'm done with this as I am with Carmella Hayes and Andrade on SmackDown. Like, there's no reason for it that they've been fighting for what feels like 2 years at this point between the two factions. there's only so long you can hold up the Dom and Ray thing before it becomes corny and tiresome. I thought when they had the Mania match that we were done with this. Obviously not. But yeah, Bronson Reed and Braun Strowman paired together is working a lot better than I thought it would. They're doing the big man versus big man story perfectly this time. Whereas I feel like in the past when they've tried this, it hasn't really worked, but they're booking this sort of Kong versus Godzilla style, and it's actually working. And so congrats to Triple H. You found something for me to praise you on in your booking. Very hard these days. But yeah, I'm enjoying it. They're having a last monster standing match next week. Now, let me tell you sort of, this is where I'll insert my I'm tired of the Wyatt Six rant. Because they put on some QR code. I don't even know if it was after this segment or sometime later in the night, but I'm going to go ahead and talk about it. QR code for the Wyatt Six, which again, can we just stop with the QR codes? We're going to do this in between every feud to set up another feud. We're just going to do 6 months of QR codes. And so I'm at the point now where I'm like, I'm not going to scan it. I'm going to let the nerds online and the IWC do it. And then they can salute that out. And then I'll go and find what they salute out. And so this QR code led to a website that said recapitulation. And then had a bunch of other video links for you to click. Now, for those who don't know, recapitulation is basically a fancy word for when a story gets told from multiple angles, right? And so, like, when you're watching a movie and they show you a scene in the movie from, you know, one person's point of view, and then the next, you know, they do like a flashback to it, but you see the scene from someone else's view or from other, right? Or, right, so you're seeing the same activity happen. You're just watching it from a different perspective, where each perspective shows you something. So, for example, I like to use the idea of like instant replay, right? So there's about 6-7 cameras that TV companies in a football game have, right? You have the one that's right on the quarterback. You have the one that goes across the field that follows the ball. You have the pylon cam. You have the cam that's sort of wide out, see the whole field, right? And so when they show an instant replay of a big play down the field, maybe you get one from the quarterback to show what he's seeing. Maybe you get one that follows the receiver. Then you get the pylon cam or whatever, right? And so each viewing of that play is a recapitulation of the play, right? From a different angle, right? And so the idea that I feel like they're trying to tell us is, with all these videos they've been showing, it's the same thing from a different perspective, but none of the perspectives make sense here. You go through and you click on all the links, and they're essentially all of the promos that have already been shown, and I think a new one. And I have a really big thing here that I think the next person they're attacking or going after or recruiting will end up being Braun Strowman. And I have a feeling they're interfering in this match, because the new promo on the website, the new video that gets released, is titled like 0223 something or whatever, right? And if you type in the date, it is an episode of SmackDown from 2020, from February of 2023, which would have been an episode that Bray Wyatt was actually on. In fact, I had previously pulled up that episode. I believe I had previously pulled up, and he was He was, I'm pretty certain, Bray Wyatt was on this episode. There was an episode. Anyway, it points you back to an episode. Now, that episode took place in Evansville, Indiana. Now, if you don't know the schedule, if you don't pay attention to where the events are held, I kind of pay attention to that because I'm one of the people who like the there's a like a Twitter page called WrestleTix, and it tells you how many are sold versus how many are available and stuff like that, right? And I keep up with that. But they're going to be in Evansville, Indiana next Monday. And so I feel like this was all sort of a playback to say Evansville, Braun Strowman, The Fiend was on this show. And back in 2023, right? And I feel like Braun Strowman versus Bronson Reed is going to get, because it's last monster standing, it doesn't have to, it's a no DQ match. And so I feel like that gives a perfect excuse for Howdy and them to interrupt the match, right? So that's what I'll put there. The next thing we'll talk about is Drew's promo. It's your standard promo. He basically just says he's going to destroy CM Punk, right? And so we get Punk's big promo last week, Drew's this week. Next week, they'll probably both be in the arena. They'll probably not, because, you know, CM Punk is going to be on NXT the night, you know, on Tuesday, which leads me, again, I forgot to mention this, on Tuesday, me and Wavy D doing our live stream of the October 1st NXT, this big event. I think we get Drew at this event. I do. I'm really feeling it. Milwaukee Mike sort of brought the idea of, like, does Punk get interfered with during the night by Drew? And I don't know. I think you have to. Something happens on Monday that maybe sets Drew off or something. The next thing I want to talk about is the lack of control of the back locker room that Adam Pearce seems to not have anymore. Like, he has zero control. You got Pete Dunne attacking Sheamus every week with a shillelagh or a cricket bat. You have every time we turn around, it seems like there's a fight, right? And so there's zero control on Pierce's ability. Like, he has zero control, right? And someone said, well, Nick Aldis would never allow it. Nick Aldis doesn't have a roster, it feels like. SmackDown seems like it's the same five people every week. Right, you get the Bloodline, you get Kevin Owens, you get Cody, you get Andrade, you get Carmelo, and occasionally you'll get LA Knight. And that seems to be the axe that Nick Aldis brings to the locker room each week with him. Maybe if we're lucky, we'll get a Nia Jax and a Tiffany Stratton and a Bayley and a Naomi. But outside of that, you're crossing the line. Like you have a very small locker room, it feels like, to, right? Raw seems to be like he brings the whole roster with them, and half of them don't have things to do, so they just beat each other up backstage. It's what it feels like, right? But moving forward, Damage Control versus Unholy Union. Do we really care about this? I'm done with the women's tag division. I'm happy with the state because of who the champions are, but there's really no one strong enough, in my opinion, on that can defeat them. I wish what we would do is just break these titles up, stop the whole women's tag team thing, and just make these belts mid-card belts. So you have the same number of title belts in the company. Because you don't necessarily need this title. I don't think the division is really called for. I think it's a thing where, you know, Alba Fire can go by herself. Isla Dawn can go by herself. Jade and Bianca can go by themselves. The stud line that we call them, or PFC as they call, WWE calls them, they could all theoretically go by them. And so the thing with like PFC is like that seems to be like a faction, right? Factions are fine. Like Judgment Day is fine, right? Because each individual person in the faction has a team it's fighting for, right? So I'm not against factions. I'm just against having a women's tag team title when the tag team division isn't all that deep. With that, though, we end with or we have two more matches. We have New Day versus American Made. American Made's my new favorite tag team. It just everything about them just screams entertainment, wrestling, and fun, right? And Chad Gable's got this, right? He's got the Creeds under his tutelage. He's got Ivy Nile, right? This is what the original Diamond Mind, when they brought them in, when it was Ivy, the Creeds, I think Roddy Strong was a part of it. Funny enough, Tatum Paxley was actually a part of Diamond Mind at one point. I completely forgot about that. But this is what Diamond Mind should have been, right? This should have been sort of the we're the best wrestlers, were right. But this also adds in the element of like the cocky American team that, right. And so I like it. I like it a lot. The New Day split, I don't actually care about. I've been calling for a New Day split for several years at this point. It's fun. It's going to happen. We're going to get Kofi versus Xavier. I'll pop for it. It'll be a good match. But outside of it, I don't care, to be honest with you. We then end with the IC title match, where main event Jey Uso does win the IC title. I knew this going into the night. When they started promoting this and going over his record on he's fought for this, like he's fought for a singles title like six times. And the first thought that came to my mind, well, the seventh one, seven is the number of perfection. The seventh one is going to make this, it's when he's going to get it. I just felt the way they presented him throughout the whole night in terms of promoting this match. It just, I knew without a shadow of a doubt when the match started, Jey Uso was winning. Just by the way they presented it. And so Jey Uso wins the IC title. I'm not someone who's going to be like Vince Russo. Vince Russo said that they took the title off of Braun too early. I thoroughly disagree. I don't even think Braun needed that belt. Y'all know my booking. I thought Braun Breaker should have been immediately pushed into the world title picture when Gunther won it. Imagine having Braun Breaker's Money in the Bank, right? Because I didn't necessarily think Drew Punk needed Money in the Bank thrown into it, right? So if Braun would have won it and had, you know, this destructive path or whatever that got him suspended from Germany, he comes, you know, he came and attacked Jay last week or 2 weeks ago, dressed in a hoodie and pants. Bro, that's literally the way that I predicted or that I booked, pre-booked, you know, around Money in the Bank time, that Braun attacked Gunther in Germany with the briefcase, cashed in, won the title, and Braun Breaker, right? But I 100% believe that Braun Breaker will be world champion going into January. Not in January, not at Royal Rumble. No. Not he's winning the Rumble. I've changed my mind on that. We got to find someone new to win the Rumble, right? Because that's who my pick was. But I 100% believe that going into Netflix, it's, I think, reported that the first episode on Netflix will be January the 6th, 2025, from Los Angeles. Going into that night, you need Braun Breaker as champion, right, to promote, right? Gunther doesn't make promotions for Netflix, right? Braun Breaker does. You have something you could book and promote around, right? So I thoroughly believe going into the Netflix era, Braun Breaker will be your champion. Jey Uso will be your mid-card champion. Your women's champions, Liv. There's something you can book around Liv Morgan. Rhea Ripley the same as well. So either one would work in your promotions. Your tag titles are the Judgment Day, right? And so that's why I think Liv should remain champion, because you could package those two together in your promotion, right? And so I think Braun Breaker's winning the title. And Mike, again, I actually agree with you on this one as well. He threw out an interesting date as to when this title change could happen. And he said that special Saturday night's main event, special event in December, that sounds about a perfect time. That sounds like the right time to have a big event happen where Braun Breaker wins the champ. That's going to feel like a PLE, right? Because it's a Saturday night on a special NBC channel, like on mainline cable television. That feels about right. And I'm 100% behind Braun Breaker being world champion, because Gunther just doesn't cut it at this point. But I'm happy for Jay. Congratulations. Braun, this doesn't hurt Braun Breaker at all, because he can come out and either turn super heel and go after Gunther, and just attack. With Gunther, you can have a heel or a babyface go after Gunther. That's why I think Gunther has, Gunther's a canvas for you to be able to tell good stories with, and nuanced stories, because Gunther's motivation should just be, I want to defend the ring, right? Because that's what his NXT UK thing was. His whole NXT UK thing was the mat was sacred, and when I'm in the ring, I'm protecting the sacredness of the sport, right, from the gimmicks, right? And so they've sort of turned him away from it. That's what worked. That's what kept Gunther interesting. And so Gunther could be this canvas that way. He's a bad guy when he's facing, someone like Seth Rollins or Jey Uso, because they're the good guys, right? But when he's facing someone like Braun Breaker, he can play like the same character in terms of like talking down to, I'm better than, I don't need to run fast. I don't need 23 mile an hour spears to beat my opponents. I'll just beat them down, right? Type thing. And so that's why I think Gunther is a perfect canvas. They're just not creating art with it, right? And so, but Braun Breaker needs to be world champion as soon as possible. I was going to review NXT, but outside of, it's still the best show of the week. Not much to say. I feel like I say the same thing every week about NXT. Still the best show, right? Very, very fun. I think, as we're heading into, I love the way they promoted this debut on CW as a huge event. They really made a spectacle of this event. And so we got Trick and we got Ethan Page. And as we head into next Tuesday, I'm pumped, dude. I'm pumped for next Tuesday. It's going to be a good night. And this episode, you had Waller and Theory on it this week, and they're losing tag matches on NXT. I believe they lost. Maybe they won. I don't remember. But they have a tag match next week. This episode of NXT just felt like your typical, like, go home to a pay-per-view. And that's what next Tuesday is going to be. This is a PLE card on a non-PLE show. They're making a big thing out of this. And I can't wait for it. I love it. Love it a lot. So not much to really say outside of the final promo between Julia and Roxanne. It was a little shaky at times. I didn't think it was all that bad, though. I think Julia did enough, and this is going to be your downfall, I can already tell you, because a lot of people were complaining about the promo and how this segment was just ass. And it wasn't ass. I thought it was very good. Maybe I'm blinded because I love NXT to the extent that I'll defend it a little bit. She did very well, and I feel they gave Funaki some importance as well with why he was out there by having him basically be a translator. And then you get the ending shout where Stephanie Vaquer shows up and calls out the winner. Yo, this women's division is about to cook. And a lot of people are like, well, Roxanne shouldn't even be there no more. No. Y'all don't understand how they're viewing it. I've been saying this. They view NXT going into this new TV deal as a third brand. And so Roxanne Perez doesn't need – call-ups don't exist no more. Call-ups don't exist. You're – right? The draft will probably exist, and they'll probably have draft – like, you know, draft picks. But if they're going to make this thing fair, what we need to do is have NXT at the draft. And NXT can draft potentially somebody rather than – or – have the draft be where the right. I have a lot of opinions that we could sit here and do 14,000 episodes on how I think you can manage the rosters better. You know, I disagree with, you know, there's things I agree with Mike, but I disagree with his, like, we got to strip the brand split and just put the best wrestlers on each show. If you do that, you get mid 2000s SmackDown being the 2 hour review of Raw on Monday with like three matches from the super mid card that no one cares about, right? And so you don't want that. You don't want to completely strip that and run it that way. You just need something that makes the rosters feel important. You need to keep – and this is why I say when you have rosters, you can't just allow your Raw roster to show up on SmackDown. You need to have set things. Because once you you know, give a reason why, you know, Cody Rhodes is on Raw this week without a clear explanation, then you start to lose that illusion. And so, you know, coming to NXT, I think it's fine because it is, you know, the chance for people to redo themselves. But that's where, like, NXT, you know, Ava as a GM could be making moves and being like, hey, you know, I see you don't have anything for Omos. Send them down to us. We'll or something like that, right? I feel like there's a way that the GMs could actually be a GM and manage the roster, or something like that, right? And then, so the big thing I want to talk about is this Vince documentary. And so I viewed the whole thing yesterday. Watched all six episodes yesterday. So my first thought of this was 90% of this were things that if you're informed on the world of wrestling, you probably know 90% of what was told to you. Nothing really new was here. I wrote down a few notes that I during the early episodes, but I wasn't going to sit here and take notes on the whole thing. So the first thing is that first or second episode where Vince was talking about the territories. Like, he bought the company from his dad, right? And he was talking about the territory days and his view of the territories. I don't remember exactly what he said, but he was sort of along the lines of like, I'm competing against you. Therefore I'm fine invading your talent. Right. And cause Vince McMahon and this whole thing, what I learned the most about Vince in this was he truly believed in survival of the fittest. He truly believed in the law of the jungle. And in the business world, that's kind of what you need to do to survive. A lot of people probably came out of this hating Vince McMahon more, but I really gained a lot of sort of respect for Vince. You know, the allegations and all of that shit, I understand that right? But here's the thing. That's ongoing. There's an investigation. And until he's proven innocent, I'm not going to damn his character, right? Of who Vince the real human is. And I think the other thing that I took from this was, I don't think Vince knows who he is. But I also think that Vince grew up in a pretty shitty situation, dude. Like, I don't know how you come out of this and be like, oh man, that dude's a shit man. And like, I came out of this like with a thank you, Vince mentality. Like, I'm not going to sit, let's forget about all the character flaws that he has. We all have them. We all have things that we probably, in our past, that we probably wish, and I'm not saying all of us are, you know, sexual assaulting employees. If it comes out through this investigation that that's true, okay, can we separate personal from business? On the business side of wrestling, this business doesn't exist without Vince McMahon. It doesn't survive the 80s and the 90s and the 2000s. As culture changes, territory wrestling would not have survived. I thoroughly believe that. As entertainment changed in the 40s, or excuse me, in the 80s, it changed in the 40s as well. You went from the radio to the TV, but as entertainment was changing, and movies and the big screen and all of that started becoming major things in culture, none of the wrestling territories had even considered going on TV, like, weekly. And I find it interesting that we want to damn Vince McMahon for how he treated the territories without recognizing that the territory days were pretty shitty. Like, Vince McMahon was doing what was best for business and for the industry. And I think a lot of people who shit on how he treats the industry, the territories, like, bro, that just shows that his law of I agree with him. In the business world, the law of the jungle is the way you survive. It's a dog eat dog world. And so that really, he really believed that. Some other thoughts, you know, so I love his view of, I'm competing against you. Right, because for the most part, most territory, you know, the territories, you sort of respected the boundaries, and no one really saw it as competition. It was just, well, you stay in, if your territory is northeast, you stay in the northeast. I'm gonna stay in the southeast, right? And we're not gonna cross lines. Vince didn't see it that way, and because of that, because he saw an opportunity to take control, he did. And it is kind of hilarious, though, when you get to the end of the show, the end of the docuseries, and he's talking about what WCW did to him. I don't want to say it's hypocritical, because I don't think it's hypocritical, because I do think it's two different things. I think he had zero intention of hurting the other company. So like, I kind of agree with him that Ted Turner spent money that Vince didn't have for the actual intention of hurting his competition. Whereas I think Vince spent money not to hurt the territories, but to benefit his business. And I think Vince understands that if Ted Turner spent money and did what he did for the intention of building WCW, because I don't think he had the intention of building WCW up to being the worldwide leader in sports entertainment, right? I'm with Vince on that. I don't necessarily think it makes him hypocritical, as some will say. Then another note that I wrote down here, listening to this thing, is a lot of people are going to blame Vince McMahon for killing the business. I just can't say that. Not only because I believe that he's the reason that it thrived and survived in the 80s and 90s, but dude literally saved the business, made it relevant, made it pop culture. My belief is that the business died because of guys like Dave Meltzer. Every time Dave Meltzer showed up on the screen, I cringed. Because you could tell there's a bias here. Anytime, like, first off, Dave, I'm glad you found a way to clean your office. But also, why is this dude like, why is Dave Meltzer the top dog that these companies like to get? I get it's because he's been around since the 80s. Like, he's been around Vince and all of that. But I don't know, man. The dirt sheets, I think, ruined WWE, or the business of wrestling in and of itself. I thoroughly believe that. But I also think, you know, they had that Mushnick guy on there, and he pissed me off. Because he just seems to have, like, a personal vendetta against Vince. And this Vince did some shitty things. Like, let's go. Like, I'll critique him when I need to critique him. But Mushnick just seemed like his entire goal was to kill the WWF. Yeah. These reporters and I love how, first off, I'm 100% surprised they even touched on Benoit. Some comment like Stone Cold saying he doesn't believe in CTE is an interesting take. Taker said something that was sort of like controversial. I don't fully remember it. But they go through some of these sort of controversies with steroids and cover-ups, and I don't know, man. I don't come out of this like, oh, Vince McMahon's a shitty human being. I come out of this with Vince may have done some shitty shit, but I don't think we came out of this documentary knowing the real Vince. I don't think he knows the real Vince. I think he got so caught up in the world of sports entertainment. And I also think that that's something that, like, the regular world doesn't understand. These are people in the business, not now, but back in the heyday of wrestling. Back in the 60s and 70s and 80s, wrestling wasn't just, oh, I want to be a wrestler. This was like, you're down on the dumps. This is the last thing you could do to make some money. You went to a wrestling school because that's the last thing you could do for the most part, right? These are the people who, and even on like the indie scene and some of these like local companies, like, you're not getting like the best of the best. You're getting the druggies and the carnies, the people who aren't, qualified to be doctors and lawyers. You're not getting, the best of the best, right? You're getting some pretty shady people in the industry, right? I don't know. I watched this documentary and I feel like I'm able enough to separate character from real life. Like, Hulk Hogan's a shitty person for the most part with some of the things that he's done. Now, I believe in second chances. And the idea of forgiveness is a powerful thing. So, I'm also not one of those people who, I don't know Hulk Hogan personally. And so I know he's done things in the past, but I feel like, one, we should give him second chances, because if they've earned it, but two, just the power of forgiveness of, like, I'm not going to let your past change the way I view you presently. And I feel a lot of people can't do that. And so I'm sure Vince has had some shitty things go on in his life. I'm not going to let that change the way I view the character Mr. McMahon. He's still the greatest heel of all time. This felt... Now, on the flip side, Vince posted a tweet that basically said that he doesn't agree with the narrative they made about... I don't think they really told a narrative about him that most of us don't already believe. I didn't see this as, like, damning to Vince McMahon. Right? I don't know. It was a good series. I don't really know what more to say about it. This isn't one of those things. Like, if the goal of this was to get me to hate Vince McMahon, he failed. And then that's where I'll end it. So what I want to do with this, instead of doing react to it from now on the Friday show, I'm going... So AVD had sent a message last week or the week before that asking me and Milwaukee Mike if we're doing, like, a sports podcast again. And for those who don't know, I used to run one with a group of friends called the Calling Audible Podcast, and that sort of just stopped happening. And I'll be honest, part of it for me is I don't feel... Like, with wrestling, I feel somewhat qualified to speak about it because it is opinions-based. Like, wrestling is very easy to talk about because a lot of it's subjective. A lot of it is based on, like, what you feel about the product. And so it's very opinion-based. And I can give opinions, right? Football and normal sports, there's a factual element there. And so where I would call myself a casual wrestling fan, I'm an even more casual football fan, right? And so I don't care about any other teams but mine. I don't watch any other teams but mine. I don't, you know, participate in caring to know about any other teams than mine, right? So I don't feel super qualified in it. But what I will do is sports from a general perspective. So picking a topic at the end of the Friday show each week to sort of discuss in sports, right? It's not going to be breakdown of games or any of that. It's just going to be sort of like a general topic, some general news, like something that I can give opinions on, right? So we're heading into hockey season in about 2 weeks, I think, is when the regular season starts. So we'll probably discuss some hockey stuff. I know a lot of y'all don't care about hockey. Talk about football, definitely. Not a big basketball fan, I'll be honest. So I will say Caitlin Clark and the Indiana Fever season is over. They did get eliminated. So I just want to say, bro, the Fever went from worst team in the league to in the playoffs at 20-20. There's still a lot of work to do on the team, but this team is going to be dangerous in a few years if they can continue building from what they've got, right? That's all I'll say about that. But today's topic is controversial in and of itself. And that is going to be NIL. The NIL and the transfer portal. And this all stems from UNLV, essentially. Without really giving opinions on that whole NIL, the specific example of UNLV, because I don't know the details, don't really necessarily care about the details. But I do want to talk about the portal, and I do want to talk the transfer portal, and I do want to talk about NIL. So for those who watch for the wrestling content, I would thoroughly, understand if you guys stopped watching here, if that's all you came here for. But if you want to stay, I'll explain what I'm talking about. So for those who don't know, in college football, there's a system called the transfer portal. Essentially, the transfer portal is I'm foregoing this year of playing with the idea of I'm going to keep the year of eligibility to play at my new team, right? So let's say I come in, I'm 18 years old, I'm a freshman, and, you know, maybe it's I'm a quarterback, and I don't have the playing time as a freshman. They redshirt me, which means that a redshirt means I don't lose a year of eligibility on the team, right? So let's say I come in as a freshman, I get redshirted, I still have 4 years of eligibility. Year two at the college, right? So my first year of eligibility, I sit the bench. My second year is when I'm the starter, and I'm the starter for 2 years. I have one more year left. I'm what's called a redshirt senior or fifth year senior, right? And what I recognize is, you know, a lot of your transfers are the fifth year seniors for the most part. I realize, okay, they're bringing in a stud star high school recruit, or maybe they went to the transfer portal and found a better quarterback than me. And so I'm going to enter the portal because I'm not going to be the starter. I got 1 year left. I'm going to go find another college to play for, right? Maybe bigger opportunities or something, right? And so I transfer schools. And I play my fifth year at a different school, right? Now, transfers have always been a thing in college football. It's not like this is like a brand new, but typically you would lose a year of eligibility. If you, like, it used to be like in the early 2000s, if you transferred, you had to sit out a year and you lost a year of eligibility. And so the portal and the transfer rules leaving that you could keep that year of eligibility, that's a big thing. From my understanding, that's how it worked. My issue with the portal is it's not regulated. And so you have guys who come in as freshmen, don't get the opportunities they think they should get. So they transfer three or four times in their high school or in their college career, excuse me. And it's just a clusterfuck. So I believe the way you fix this is you regulate the transfer portal where you can transfer one time in your 4 years. And you can't transfer until your junior year. I believe you have to give the team you commit to out of high school 2 years of your time. Now, if they redshirt you, which is typically like what should happen, is I thoroughly believe, at least my mindset is, like, I'll just give you a case here of, if you go and look at my NCAA 25 college football, the video game, my dynasty mode, where I'm the coach, I control recruiting, I control redshirting, all that, right? 95% of the freshmen each year that I recruit in are redshirted, right? Because I want to keep you for 5 years and not 4 years, right? Understanding some may transfer, some may not. But I want to keep you for the maximum amount of time that I can have you on the roster. I also am a big believer, like, freshmen shouldn't start. I don't think the idea of, like, promising a freshman coming onto campus as a freshman, no red shirt, like, you're 18. I don't believe freshmen should start. That's just my opinion. I think you have to sit a year. You have to learn the system. You have to learn college. I think, you know, if I was a college head coach, I'd probably redshirt 95% of the freshmen that I bring into the program, right? That's just how I feel about that, right? And so you should give the team you recruit to 2 years of your time, and the redshirt year does count. So redshirt year, then your redshirt freshman year. So, right, that means you have to be on the team for 2 years before you can transfer. But you can only transfer once. It would be how I view it. Or, let me take that back. You can transfer twice. But each time you transfer, so let's say I'm a two-star recruit coming in. Let's say I live in Charlotte, so let's just use the Charlotte 49ers. I commit to the Charlotte 49ers as a freshman. I get redshirted because definitely as a two-star recruit, probably not the best player, right? So I get redshirted my freshman year, my second year in the program, technically still I'm what they call a redshirt freshman, right? So you have true freshman and redshirt freshman, right? Just trying to break down the lingo here. So as a redshirt freshman, I play, maybe 6 or 7 games in like a backup role. Let's say I'm a defensive tackle, right? I'm 6'2", 300. Let's just say that was my body build, right? And so defensive tackles, they swap out a lot, right? So you may use 3 or 4 different people at that position. It's not like quarterback where there's number one on the depth chart and number two never sees the field unless number one's hurt, right? And so I see action in 6 or 7 games my redshirt freshman year. I decide, Charlotte's not where the opportunity is for me. I'm getting, maybe better scholarship because we're going to talk about that here in a second when we talk about NIL. Maybe a better scholarship, maybe more opportunity to be a starter and play more games. So I transfer up the road to NC State. And so now I'm at NC State, better conference, better team, better opportunities. So when I transfer, I have to give, just like I gave Charlotte 2 years, I have to give NC State 2 years. That should be the rule. And so my redshirt sophomore, my redshirt junior year, I'm at NC State and I play and I'm doing good. But my draft stock's not there, right? I could technically go to the draft because the NFL rule is you just have to be in college for 3 years. I believe is the rule. And so I could go to the draft, but I do have 1 year left of eligibility that I decide I want to transfer again. I want one more year. This is my last year of college football. I'm going to transfer. And I did a pretty good job the last 2 years at NC State. And, big SEC program, LSU is calling. So I'm going to go play 1 year at LSU, right? That's how I believe the transfer portal should work. It shouldn't be, and it should be a promotion of opportunity, right? Because what you notice a lot of times is you got guys who, transfer from, I'll use some examples of some guys from Clemson has had, because that's my college team. We've had some guys commit to Clemson and literally use the transfer portal to transfer to, like, USF. That's a demotion, dude. Worst program, probably better opportunity, right? But there's another thing that ties into why people transfer, and that's the NIL system, or name, image, and likeness system. That system basically states that college players can now be paid for their name, image, and likeness. 100% agree with the system. I just think it's not used properly. I don't think it's regulated. I think you have to change the way that this is done as well, because essentially how it's being run now is essentially it's just free agency. At the end of every season, it's essentially free agency. And so this really comes to light because of the UNLV situation, not speaking on that situation specifically, but I want players to get paid because a lot of people come in and they're of the mindset of, well, they get free education. Okay, but what about the walk-ons? What about the non-scholarship players? They don't have the scholarship. They're still paying. They still, right? And they're playing on the football team, so they probably don't have a job. Right? What about the players? I also don't think people understand that scholarship doesn't necessarily mean full ride. And it definitely doesn't mean covers all expenses of college. Most cover tuition and board, and most are like two-year scholarships. And you have to continue to earn the scholarship each year. And so I'm all for players being paid. There are even some who are like, well, I don't think that outside companies should sponsor them. I disagree with that take. I think outside companies should. In fact, that's what I believe NIL should be. I don't think the schools should be paying players. I think what they need to regulate this to is schools still can't pay players. Let them go be sponsored by Bojangles or the local laundromat or anything like that. That's fine. But they shouldn't be getting multi-million dollar deals from these booster clubs, these collectives that take donation money, right? Because here's my problem if we just have the schools pay them. At some point, they're going to unionize. I already have mapped this out. If only the schools pay them, if it's the schools only, right, they can't get sponsorship. At some point, they're going to unionize, and at some point, they're going to demand that they get the benefits of school employees, right? That they work for the school. And that's a problem for not all schools, because there are private schools that are privately funded. But for the state-run schools, for someone like, you know, let's you say Clemson or, you know, most of your college football teams are state-run schools. You know, Notre Dame's a private school. Duke's a private school. Stanford's a private school. But you get you know, Ohio State, UNC, LSU, Alabama, these, like, state-run government jobs, right? If the players say, well, we work for the school. The school pays us. We're school employees. Now you're asking taxpayers to pay players. Now they have legitimate opportunity to say, well, we deserve health care from the government and government benefits because we're government employees, right? You see what I'm saying? And so I 100% believe NIL should be, you know, the three-star recruit comes in and plays middle linebacker and he has a cool name, like, you know, the forest, the coldest, whatever his name was. And he, you know, the coldest was his name. And he was a receiver, I believe, but he got like the HVAC company that sponsored him. 100% believe that's what NIL should be. Right. 100% believe that's what NIL should be. That I come out and I do press opportunities. I get sponsored by the local company down the street or by some, you know, if you're good enough, if you know, DJ Uiagalelei somehow managed to get Dr. Pepper and Bojangles to sponsor him before he went out and started playing like ass. But if Bojangles wants to sponsor me, if you know, the local sub shop wants to sponsor me and I do a press release or I wear his, I have to market his company in my social media post or whatever, right? Then I think that's what NIL should be. I don't think it should be this, you know. So I'm gonna use Clemson because that's what I know. Their booster club is called IPTAY, IPTAY. It stands for something. I don't remember what it stands for. If it, essentially what NIL does is IPTAY is the booster club. They take the IPTAY money, they put it in a giant collective, and that's what they use to try to get players to come to school. It's booster club money. And I don't believe that this should be controlled by booster clubs. I don't think that the University of Alabama should get a benefit in NIL because they have a larger donation base through their boosters. I don't think that that's fair or equal. I think the way NIL needs to work is boosters can't pay athletes. The school can't pay athletes, but companies can. And if Fanatics wants to sell, you know, signed, who's the number one player in college football right now? Ollie Gordon is the top player. I don't actually know a lot of this generation's players this year because all the ones that I would have used just got drafted. You know, if Fanatics wants to sell, or if Clemson Athletics wants to sell Cade Klubnik jerseys through Fanatics, right? Cade Klubnik signed jerseys, that Cade should be able to get part of that money. Absolutely. If, you know, if EA Sports wants to make someone a cover athlete of the game and pay them, they should be able to do that, right? You know, if Bojangles wants to sponsor the quarterback of Georgia, right? They should be able to. If, you know, I don't think that this should, that's how I would fix NIL. Just outside companies paying for sponsorships. That's what I believe NIL should be. I don't think it should be anything more than that. Payers deserve to get paid, but they're not school employees. They're school students. They should be able to get sponsorship deals to where they can get paid, right? And I'm just not big on the whole collective, excuse me, what they call the NIL collectives that basically just take donations and booster funds, and the larger booster clubs can outbid everybody. Because of that, what you end up getting is this NIL situation in UNLV, where I don't know the full situation. Some say that Saluka, the quarterback, asked for more money. Some say that he didn't get the money that he agreed to. The issue with that, if it's just a handshake deal, there's nothing in paper, don't expect to get what they promised you. That's why you got to get it in paper, my dude. And so what's going to end up happening is these NIL collectives are going to promise that they can't keep, but because there's no contract, they're not going to be held accountable for it. And they're going to abuse the system and cheat the system to essentially manipulate kids to come in to play for them, right? And that's not beneficial for anybody. I don't blame Saluka for leaving if he's not getting what was promised, because that's just a bad situation to play in. But if this is just, I can get more money elsewhere, I'm going to forego the rest of this year and play next year for more money, I'm sorry. That's where I start to question the system, right? We need a little bit more regulation on both of these systems, and hopefully that fixes it. I think it's a very good thing, the transfer portal and NIL, if it's regulated, there's rules to it. I personally believe no one should be able to enter the transfer portal once the season starts. That's just my personal belief, that once the season starts, you have to play the full year. And then in the off season, you can enter the transfer portal. That's just me. I kind of understand Dabo Swinney's point of view of this, of like, we value commitment and character. Because what we essentially have now are a bunch of kids who are just chasing money. And you're not going to get drafted that way. And GMs in the NFL are seeing that. And I don't know. I don't know. Like, as a GM, like, so let me talk about this real quick, because I think this is funny. You have a situation in Carolina, the Panthers, where Andy Dalton took over and just completely demanded respect of the locker room and won a football game. And I think we're going to start having situations like that, where you have some of these prima donna, like, entitlement, like, social media age, like my generation players who are now getting into the league, who are a little bit softer, don't demand as much respect. They're not the Tom Brady type guys. And I think we're going to see a downplaying in quarterback position from guys that come in like Caleb Williams, who's a little bit more flamboyant, a little bit more, you know, not as super, like, so Tom Brady came into the league, right? And when he demanded a presence, there was a presence to Tom Brady, right? some of these old school quarterbacks were like, you weren't handed anything. Like, I was listening to Kirk Cousins' interview going into his game last week, where he talked about, like, he understands that he's not guaranteed this quarterback position. He's earning it every single week. I don't think we have that type of work ethic in a lot of the newer quarterbacks, the Bryce Youngs, the Caleb Williams, where, like, if Caleb Williams had competition, would he be able to thrive in that situation? And Bryce Young now has competition against him, and he's not he's flopping. Like, Andy Dalton's running the same offense. It's not like anything's changed. I just think Andy Dalton understands football a little bit better, but I also think he understands competition and being a pro a little bit better. I think he's a little bit more calloused and less soft in his mentality. I think we have a lot of soft mental guy, like Bryce Young, super calm, and that's cool and all, but, like, bro, you have no dog in you. Andy Dalton proved it. Now, I'm not going to sit here and jump on the Andy Dalton bandwagon like the Panthers going to the Super Bowl or anything, but Andy Dalton came in, he stepped in, and he said, this is my team. We're going to win this game, where I don't think Bryce Young has ever done that, right? I think I can use Mac Jones. Mac Jones is a very soft individual. When things don't go his way, he bitches all the time. He's a soft individual. And you get someone like Jacoby Brissett that walks in now to the Patriots, where he's not the best quarterback. I mean, bro threw for like 34 yards last week. And that's it. Like, in four quarters, we managed to get like 34 passing yards. We played awful, right? But Jacoby Brissett has this mentality of, I've been here, I've done that. Like I'm gonna work for this. And I think that's why he's the starting quarterback today. I don't know about Drake all that much. He doesn't seem like the kind of guy that complains, but I don't know. I think that's sort of the situation with, like, DJ Uiagalelei. He comes in, he's handed everything. He gets flown into Clemson with like the silver spoon in his mouth, and he's got a dad that tells him he's the greatest quarterback ever. And I think that's part of DJ's problem, is his dad overhyped him, and his dad is going to be the downfall. His dad's living through DJ right now, and that's a sad situation. Big Dave is really just like, I lost a lot of respect for him with how he handled the whole Clemson situation. But he comes into Clemson and he's handed everything. And then when he gets that spotlight and he starts getting the critique, his dad is and DJ, they sort of, you know, they're calm, cool, collected. That's fine. But they don't have that mental toughness when times get tough to play football. Right. And I think that's the new generation of quarterback we have. And just I think we're going to see a lot more of that. Enter the NFL, and I think we may see a downplay in quarterback position when the Mahomes and the stuff like, right, and the guys who do have that mental toughness, I think will be highly coveted in the league. I truly believe that. But yeah, so that's how we'll run the sports segment. Just some things that I want to talk about, like that. But that's another episode of the Slapping Meat Wrestling Podcast. My name is Weed Too Deep. Thank you all for listening, and I will – actually, let's do something. I haven't got to answer B-Master's questions. So I'm going to talk about them now, because we won't have time to talk about them next week, because we're going to be covering the live show. So I'll talk about them now. I just remembered this. He asked three questions. It's almost the end of the year. How would you rank Triple H performance so far? Mid, like a C+. Outside of Mania, which I think he royally fucked up. Just looking back at hindsight, I think he royally fucked up WrestleMania. Just personally, Cody winning the title is fine, but he didn't have the necessary. Triple H built that story. So that singular story, first off, was handed to Triple H. Let's just be completely honest with you. But he didn't build the necessary foundation for Cody Rhodes to be champion outside of Cody Rhodes himself, right? He hasn't, he didn't build a strong heel to immediately come after the title. He didn't have strong opponents on the way to Roman coming back to get the title, right? And so I'm just going to say he's pretty mid. He gets a C-plus from me. Out of the three companies, where would you rank them on like a school scaling grade, A to F? And I'm assuming the companies he means are TNA, AEW, and WWE, which is fine. WWE gets a B plus for me. I don't think it's 100% perfect, but I think it's doing really well. I'll give it a B plus, like a strong B plus, like close to A minus, but like a B plus. TNA, I'm gonna give it a B minus. TNA's got very good product. They just don't have very good TV deals. And I think if they could get a TV deal where they're on national TV, where more people can watch them, more people would watch them. That's just how I feel about it. But the product wise, from what I've seen, B plus, B minus. And then AEW, this is gonna sound rude. AEW's gonna get a C minus from me. Like, there's so much potential with the roster you have, but you just get in your own fucking way. Like, I'm done with that. Like, AEW, I don't really see anything in it. It seems like that Mud Show, like that. It seems like they're trying to combine like everything in the world of wrestling into one show, and then everything else just like, because they're mixing so much together, everything just looks like a piece of shit, right? And so it's not good to me. I'm gonna change his third question, because his third question was cancel, renew, suspend. Which of the three companies would you do for? Well, what would you do for each of the three companies? The problem with that is I don't think it's fair for me to judge AEW and TNA when I don't watch them every single week on what I would do to them. So I'm changing it just a little bit. Cancel, renew, suspend. Which of the three? What would you do to the three WWE shows? Because I watch Raw, NXT, and SmackDown every week. So I can do this, right? So cancel, that's gone for good. Renew, you're back on air. And then suspend for a year. You know, so let's go ahead and get who I would renew out of the way, because we already know where this is going. NXT is renewed. NXT is renewed. That's the best show in wrestling to me, so we're going to renew NXT. Now we have to talk about Raw and SmackDown. But this isn't even a hard choice. We're canceling SmackDown. Current SmackDown right now, I said this on Nerdy D's Friday show, I think last Friday, SmackDown is becoming the very thing that I hate about AEW. Right? Just monotonous matches that happen for no reason. No real storyline being told, right? Just 2 hours of blit, right? And so we're canceling current edition SmackDown. And we'll suspend Raw, because Raw is not much better, if we're being honest. It's got a lot more story going on, and so that's what keeps it interesting. But, so that's that. Next Tuesday as well, while we're talking about NXT, and there's going to be some lulls in the conversation, I will introduce the new bracket for the Celebrity Edition Tuesday. So be out for that. I've showed it to Wavy D already. That bracket will be introduced to you guys on Tuesday, and then the next Tuesday, 10/8, October 8th. That next Tuesday, it will be when we actually start the bracket with the first matchups. So I can't wait for that to start. And with that being said, thank you all for watching the Slap and Meat Wrestling Podcast. The power held out all episode. That's great. Like, share, subscribe if you're on podcast networks. Give us a follow. Subscribe. A review. Share it with all your wrestling friends. And I'll see you guys on the next episode. Brother, I'm going run a wild Hulk Hogan. If I like get some moment, I'll make sure it's an explosion. Cause lately I've been seeing stars.
it's no hope.